We are in the 9th chapter. The Bhagavad Gita is a most beautiful, very wonderful text that teaches us the science of living. And who is this Brahman, the God, the Lord, and what is my relationship with him and how I can reach that state of becoming one with him. And the 9th chapter is the highest knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, and we are so blessed that we have a teacher like Swami Chinmayananda who has interpreted this for us and given us the beautiful commentary. And I feel very blessed that I am able to share this with all of you. It is really fortunate that we can study this text, because it's the knowledge is indescribable, the beauty of this text and the way it is written, it's so marvelous. So last week we talked about the qualities of the Lord, and the Lord says, I am the Father, the Mother, I am the origin of this whole universe. Vedyam Pavitram Omkaraha, and I am that which is to be known. And I am the symbol Om. Om is the one of God's names. And then I am all the Vedas, the Rig Veda, Sam, Yajur. That means I am all the scriptures. I am the Bible, I am the Quran, I am the Bhagavad Gita. And then in the 18th verse, we read about his different qualities. Gatir, Bharta, Prabhu, Sakshi. He is the goal. He is the Lord. He is the witnessing consciousness. He is the abode. He is the beginning, the middle, the end of this universe. And he is the immutable, unchanging seed. So when you hear some of these qualities, we may think that the God is somebody who doesn't do much, who is inert, who just sits there. You know, when we say he's the witnessing consciousness, unchanging, immutable. So he's like he's the support, but he doesn't do anything. You know, he's like the absentee landlord, like a person who owns the land and then gives the land to some farmers to plow. So the farmer does all the work and he just sits back and does nothing. So is God like that, just sitting and doing nothing? You know, is he a absentee landlord? Maybe then we are better than him, because we get energy from him and then we go out and work in the world. So to make that point clear, he gives us this verse so that we don't have that misunderstanding. Chapter 9, 19th verse. Tapam yaham aham varsham. Nigrhanam yutsrijami cha. Amritam chaiva mrityuscha. Sadasachaham Arjuna. So he says, I have the key in my hand. I have the key in my hand. Tapami aham. I provide heat. How? In the form of the sun. I provide heat. Aham varsham nigranami utsrijami cha. I control the rain. So I can hold the rain back. Varsha means rain. Nigranami means I control. Utsrijami, I release. So I can control the rain. I can release the rain. Amritam cha aiva mrityuscha. Amritam means immortality. Cha means and. Mrityu, I am immortality. And I am death. Mrityu. Sad asad. So I am sat and I am asad. Sat and asat has two different meanings. One is it is existence and non-existence, I am. Or it also means manifest and unmanifest, I am. Aham Arjuna, O student Arjuna, I am all these. Even though we are supposedly functioning in the world, but the key of the world is in his hand. The example they give is like, say there is an old man who has run a successful factory for many years. And so it comes time for him to retire. So he says, you know what? I have given all the business to my son. I don't run anything. I just go there once in a while just to check on the factory, but I don't run it. So they say, yeah, wow, you are so generous. You know, you gave all the business to your son. Yes. When you ask the son, you know what? He thinks he has given everything. All he has given me is the headaches. I am running the business, But when it comes to signing the check writing is in his hands. He has kept that in his hands. Everything else he has given me. Yeah, all the headaches. And when I have any need, any money, I need a check for $200, I'll go and ask him, Dad, I need a check for $200. Why do you need the check? Or I have to order some supplies. What happened to those you had ordered last week? Well, we already manufactured and sent them. Okay, so where is the receipt? Did the money come? So he says he's sitting home and doing nothing, but he's controlling the whole factory. You know, like a manager, you know, like a manager in a company, a good manager, administrator, does not get involved in the nitty-gritty of the things. You know, he just keeps a few strings in his hand and then makes the whole office dance to his tune. The people do all the work, but he controls. So similarly, the Lord here is the controller of this universe, and he makes us think that we are doing it. So how does he control? Apami aham. So I, as the sun, provide heat. And that is true. If there was no sun, if there was no heat, not only if there was no sun, say if the temperature of the sun goes up, you know, average temperature, 10 or 15 degrees, the whole earth, you know, all the vegetation will get destroyed. Even in our own body, a temperature is maintained at 98.4. But if it goes up a little bit, 1 degree higher, oh, I have a fever, I have to go to the doctor. Or if it goes 1 or 2 degrees lower, the doctors know you cannot, life cannot be sustained unless that exact temperature of 98.4 is maintained. And the sun, if it goes up, you know, it will, the earth will be destroyed. Or if the temperature goes down, if the earth, sun cools down, then again everything will become cold. And the North and South Pole will become uninhabitable and people will have to move to the equator. So life as we know it will end if the sun was not there. I am the sun, and as the sun, I provide the heat. And that's why the sun is worshipped in a lot of the ancient religions as a manifestation of God. When we chant the Gayatri Mantra, Om Bhurbhuvah Svaha, Tatsavitur Varenyam, we worship that Lord Sun. We actually worship the energy that the Lord of the universe who provides energy to the sun. So he says, I am the sun. Aham varsham nigranami utsrijami. So I control the rain and I release the rain. So you say, understood. Rain, he controls. No, but if you think about it, how much we depend on the rain. Every aspect of our life depends on rain. If there is no rain, you know, crops will not grow. Or if there is too much rain, you know, if there is too much rain, then we have floods. The whole land gets flooded and people die. Or if there is no rain, then there is a drought and then there is rationing of water and then crops cannot grow and then, you know, people have no food to eat. So non-vegetarians say, we are fine. Even if crops don't go, we can eat, you know, fish and we can eat the cows and the land. But, you know, even the cows and all, they need grain. For to nourish them, they need grain, they need, you know, straw. So when the food supply is not there and the food is less, then the prices go up. And when the food prices go up, then all the workers say, we want more wages. Why? Because food has gone up, you know, so much. And when they want more wages, they go on strike. And they go on strike, the factory owners, there is a conflict. And then if there is not enough water, no electricity is generated. You know, so many parts of the world depend on hydroelectric energy. Like even in the Southern California, most of our energy comes from the Hoover Dam, you know, where the Colorado River goes to the Hoover Dam and releases electricity. And if there is no rain, if there is not enough snow melting, there's not going to be enough water, there's not going to be electricity, the industrial production will suffer, you know, people will only get, like in India, certain parts when there is a shortage, you only get electricity for 2 hours or 4 hours a day. So everything, the whole world's economy depends on rain, depends on water. And that's why it is one of the most important factors. That's why the two most important things that the Lord has chosen, he says, the sun I am and I am the rain. I can release the rain or I can hold the rain. And it is the rain that ultimately decides the entire weather and the entire economy of the whole earth. Then he says, Amritam chaiva mrityuscha. I am immortality and I am death. So, as we know, we recognize that the Lord is the originator of the universe, the supporter and the destroyer. That's why we worship Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh. Brahmaji, the creator, Vishnu, the sustainer, and then Mahesh or Shiva, the one who takes us away. And all three are one aspects of that one entity. And death is an important part of creation because there has to be ongoing change. Like when the morning is there, when the morning dies, the noon is born. The noon dies, the evening is born. When the night dies, the next day is born. Childhood dies and youth is born. So death is a constant factor in our whole body. There are cells dying and new cells being created. So the concept of death is something that is feared by every one of us. You know, there is a very famous line in Somerset Maugham's novel, The Razor's Edge. It's one of his most famous novels. And there the hero says, "The dead look so dead when they are dead." The dead look so dead when they are dead. And we have so much fear of death. You know, oh my God, what will happen? And then we do everything to, you know, to prevent, to prolong life and to do this and to do. Yeah, we're not saying that, you know, you should not go to the doctor or take medicine. But that fear of death, that what will happen to me when I die? Because we think of death as being a final act. Okay, person is dead and gone. But we all have to realize, he says, I am immortality. I am the immortal substance that is always present. As the each and every one of us is a manifestation of that immortal consciousness that we call as Om. And that I am. And death is only a change. You know, I went from birth to middle age to old age to death. So I am that immortal consciousness which we indicate as Om. And I am present even when this body dies, because nothing happens to the consciousness. The body may die, the mind may change, the intellect may be changing, my desires are changing, but as the consciousness. So they say that identify with the consciousness, that I am that Sat, I am that immortal, permanent existence. And even when the body dies, nothing happens to me. And when one person lives with that kind of an attitude, then even death has no fear for them, as we see in the lives of these great prophets and great saints. You know, even when they were faced with death, you know, Jesus, or when we look at the Sikh gurus and a lot of the great saints, you know, like Ramakrishna Paramhans and Tapovan Maharaj in their life. In Tapovan Maharaj's life, there was a very beautiful incident. He was the guru of Swami Chinmayananda, who is the founder of our mission. And Tapovan Maharaj was very sick, and he lived in the Himalayas, in way in a rural area, away from all medical care. And he was lived by the banks of the river and spent his whole life in meditation by the banks of the Ganga. And people came and studied from him. And he was very sick, and his last time was there, and he was lying, you know, on his bed and extremely ill. And his student was Swami Chinmayananda, who at that time had just started, you know, teaching and spreading the knowledge throughout India, and he had a lot of followers. And so he goes to his guru, and he becomes very sad, even though he was a great saint. But at that moment, guru is like a father. So he becomes sad, and he says, you know, Guruji, he says, Gurudev, I'd like to take you to Delhi, because I have, you know, followers, and I have some doctors who are my students, and we can take you by helicopter to Delhi and get you good medical care in the hospital. So Tapovan Maharaj looks at him and says, Chinmaya, is this what I have taught you? He says, don't people die in Delhi? Do they live forever? No. He says, I do not want to go anywhere. You know, even by going there, if I prolong my life by a few days or a few months, what is it? You know, I'm happy. I'll stay by the beloved Ganges in the shelter of the Himalayas, and I will just drop my body. So in these great Mahatmas' lives, we see that they become totally fearless. Death has no fear for them. Why? Because they have understood that they are that permanent consciousness, and nothing can destroy that. Even in the second chapter, you know, Sri Krishna says that this Atman, you know, knives cannot cut it, fire cannot burn it, water cannot wet it, air cannot dry it. He says, then why are you afraid? of death, he tells Arjuna, because you are that consciousness, and no matter how many weapons are there, they cannot cut it. So that's why he says, I am immortality and I am death too. And the idea is that while going through the changes of life, you always become a witness and watch your body deteriorating, watch your mind going through its changes, watch the intellect going through its change of concepts, but stay with that. And that idea that I am the immortal consciousness. Another meaning of this word, amritam chaiva mrityuscha, is that immortality and mortality are concepts of the intellect, right? That immortality and mortality is something I can intellectually understand. Like form and formless, ugly and beautiful, small and big, they are all concepts of the intellect. So immortality and mortality are intellectual concepts. But I am beyond both. None of the intellectual concepts can describe it. No matter how many Gitas you read, how many Bibles you read, how many times you listen, but the words cannot describe that state of consciousness, Brahman, that no language in the world is capable, whether it's Latin or Greek or Sanskrit, no language can describe it. So it says, I am beyond both. So all intellectual concepts are concepts of this world. Something is mortal, something is immortal, something is, you know, like the mud is immortal and the pot is mortal. The pot is created by the mud and then ultimately destroyed. So immortality and mortality are concepts of the intellect, like form and formless. You say God is form or formless. Well, he is both. You can worship him as Krishna or Jesus or Shiva or Buddha, or you can worship him as the formless, all-pervading consciousness, or you can worship him as the life in all the beings. So all those are intellectual concepts. He is beyond all those. So that's why he says, amritam chaiva mrityuscha. I am both and I am sat and asat. Both I am. What do we mean by sat and asat? One meaning of sat is existence and asat means non-existence. So I am existence and I am non-existence. He does not say I am non-existent. He says, I am non-existence. Like existence, like this chair is existent, you know, the paper is existent, this book is existent. It exists. But the horns on my head, do they exist? No. I do not have horns on my head, thank God. So the concept of existence and non-existence are both known to the consciousness. The consciousness in me can see the book and also can see that there are no horns on my head. So existence I am aware of and non-existence also I am aware of, and I am beyond both. I am the awareness that is constantly present in this state of existence and non-existence. Like somebody was living and then he dies. So we say, okay, he's no longer here. Or he was living in Bakersfield and he moved to Los Angeles. So they say he does not exist anymore in Bakersfield. He exists in Los Angeles. But his presence when he was in Bakersfield, I'm aware of. And his absence also I'm aware of, that he no longer is in Bakersfield. He has moved to Los Angeles. So the presence and the absence, I am both. And I am beyond presence and absence. And another meaning of sat and asat is unmanifest and manifest. And I am both. Like in our case, what is unmanifest? Unmanifest is my vasanas are unmanifest. My intellect, my mind is only manifest to me, is not manifest to all of you. What I am thinking, what I am feeling, what are my desires. But what is manifest is my speech and my actions. So the speech is manifest to every one of you. My actions, I'm moving my hand, holding the book. So it says that the unmanifest is from where everything manifests, like my vasanas and my desires and my thoughts and my emotions create the actions. So the unmanifest creates the manifest. Again, to give an example of the gold is the unmanifest. It is, and then when it is modified, when it is changed, it makes all the beautiful ornaments, the necklace and the bangle and all. So he says that I am the unmanifest and I am the manifest and I am both and I am beyond both. Ultimately, none of these words can describe him. So that's why he says, in fact, in all the scriptures, you know, we hear there was another famous scripture where the teacher says, he says, I cannot stay quiet without speaking. Bole bina ruk nahi sakta hu. I cannot stay silent. I have to speak. But he says, but when I speak, I get depressed because I'm not able to describe that in beautiful state I have experienced. So these Mahatmas, when they experience that state out of compassion for us, they come and try to describe it. And they describe it in the Bible, in the Quran, in the Bhagavad Gita. But then at the end of it, all of them say, it cannot be described. This state is impossible to be put in words. But why do they do that? If it is impossible, then why are they doing it? And why are we even wasting our time reading the Bhagavad Gita? Because the saints, in their infinite compassion, give us this knowledge so that we may also try to reach that state that they have experienced. So to encourage us, to tell us that I have reached and you can also reach. So to give us encouragement, to give us guidance, to give us a direction. So that is why Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary says that each and every one of these descriptions can be used as arrows that can take us to that path, that can lead us to the path. So in your meditation, you sit down and say, I am that which is manifest, unmanifest, and I am beyond it. I am that which is mortal, immortal. I am that immortal consciousness, and I am beyond that. So those arrow marks, you know, are what can take you to that state of consciousness, which we all have to wake up to. Ultimately, the goal of spirituality is to realize that immortal truth and to understand that I am not separate from him. He's part of me. I am part of him. He is all pervading. He is everywhere. And I am in this ocean of consciousness. And it is the Lord that is illumining my body as heat, as, you know, as we said, tapam yaham aham varsham. So he is the heat. He is the factor that is making me walk, talk, and I have to reach and realize that state. So through prayer, through service, through meditation, one can experience. So this beautiful verse can be used in taking our mind to that higher state, what we call as Father in Heaven or Brahman or the Lord of the Universe. Any comments? Yes. Like the example of the flashlight, you know, we have talked about that many times. If you're in a dark room and you turn on the flashlight and it can illumine the whole room. The room is dark, but I can see the light switch. I can see the table, chair, and I don't hit the wall. But then somebody says, I want to see what kind of battery is in your flashlight. Is it ever ready or is it Duracell? So you take out the battery and then now you're trying to see with that light, but there is no light. Right? Because the room is dark and the battery is the one that is illumining the light. So you cannot take out the battery and put it in front of the light and now try to see whether it's ever ready or Duracell. The light cannot illumine the battery. So similarly, our mind and intellect cannot illumine that consciousness. We cannot describe it. We cannot experience it. It is that consciousness that illumines my mind and intellect, and that's why words cannot describe it. I cannot even contemplate about it. I cannot think about it. I cannot talk about it. So then why are you talking? You know, why are you reading the books? Because these books can lead us to think in that direction. And in your meditation, when your mind is completely quiet or when you're sitting in puja and your mind is stilled, and in that stillness, when your thoughts slow down and when your desires slow down and your concepts slow down, then that consciousness that is there, it manifests. And so that is all. You know, in meditation, you just quieten your mind and turn the mind's attention in the direction of the life principle. So that consciousness which illumines everything else cannot become an object. You can never say, I'm going to experience God or see God. God is a illumining consciousness. In His presence, you can see everything. I am the consciousness that is beyond the manifest and the unmanifest. And I illumine both. I illumine the vasanas, I illumine the intellect, I illumine the mind, and I illumine the body. But I myself cannot be illumined by any of them. That's why they say eyes cannot see Him. In the Upanishad, it says, yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha. From where the speech returns. Why? The speech cannot describe it. Even the mind returns because the mind cannot think about it. Aprapya manasa saha. Even the mind cannot think about it. Even the intellect cannot describe it. Even the speech cannot talk about it. But it is that consciousness in whose light I am able to talk and think and all that. So that is what it means. It is beyond both. Because if you are not thinking about God, you are thinking about the world. You have to be thinking about something. The mind has to be constantly involved. Either it can be thinking about objects, emotions, thoughts, about the worldly objects, people, things. Or it can be thinking about God. And it's your choice. What do you think of? And what you think of, so you become. It is said very clearly that what you think, so you become. So as the more you think about Him, the more you contemplate upon Him, the more you describe Him, the more you pray to Him, the more you meditate, the more you serve Him and constantly remember Him, the closer you get to Him. You know, that is the idea. I think main thing is to just that's why they say just shut up. Just quieten your mind and stop speaking. And in that silence, you feel His presence. That's why they say silence is golden. Silence is the closest to Him. But we are all the time talking with our body or with our speech or with our mind. The mind is just chattering, running, thinking of just useless things, sitting on the web and just surfing the internet, doing nothing. For what? You know, if you have something purposeful, you do it. But then after that, just sit down for a while and do nothing. You know, we used to tell our children, you know, don't just stand there, do something. You know, we always tell, don't just stand there, do something. The Mahatma say, don't just do something, stand there. You know, just be quiet and just be quiet and listen to His voice. But we have no time to listen to Him because we are listening to everything else. When you shut your mind and your body and stop speaking, in that silence, you feel His presence. That's why silence is very important. That's why they say spend some amount of your time each day in silence doing nothing. Just sit, just go in the backyard and just watch the trees and the flowers and the birds. Or just, you know, sit in your room and just close your eyes and just try to chant the name of the Lord, watch your breath. And in that silence, when your mind becomes quiet, you get little glimpses of that. Of that divine silent presence. And it is impossible to make the mind silent permanently. So through chanting the mantra or through watching your breath, you can quieten the mind a little bit where it stops running. And then in that silence, turn the mind's attention inward. That is what meditation is. And that final thought that I am that consciousness, that thought then destroys all other thoughts. Raman Maharishi says, just as when there is a fire and the fire is not burning very well. You take one stick and you move the other sticks around and then the fire starts burning brighter. And ultimately that stick which was trying to move all the other sticks also catches fire and gets burnt in that fire. So that one thought that I am consciousness, I am Brahman, aham brahmasmi, that thought destroys all other thoughts of the world and all. And then ultimately even that thought disappears in the silence of meditation. But then you try to stay as a witness. So when you are functioning in the world, you cannot be without thoughts. You cannot be without actions. So while I am working in the world, be a witness. Swami Ishwarananda one time told me, he says, one of the most powerful spiritual practices is to be a witness. As I am speaking, I am watching myself speaking. Not I get lost in the speaking, but that I am observing. Or as I am thinking, I am aware of myself thinking. As I am walking on the treadmill, I am watching my body walk on the treadmill. As I am driving, instead of saying I am driving, you say I am watching myself driving. So as you become a witness and as the thoughts arising, okay, now there is a sorrowful thought arising in me. But I am not sorrowful. I am the Satchitanand consciousness. Now there is an angry thought arising in me. Now there is a happy thought arising in me. So without getting too much lost, not that you become like a rock, you know, happiness will come, you become happy, sorrowful thoughts will come, you will have sorrow. But you are not going to get drowned in that sorrow if you can witness that sorrow. Or anger comes, you know, I get very angry. Either I can give vent to that anger and go slap somebody or curse them out. Or I can be a witness and say at this moment an angry thought is arising, but I do not need to become an angry person. So it helps you to by being a witness while you're cooking, you know, you're cooking and you say, I'm watching my hands put the salt in the food. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.